was asked to talk about the war at home, and I'm from Toronto, and in Ontario, we have a lot of anti-poverty activists who've been fighting the Harris's war, specifically against the poor, since 1996, and we'll probably continue doing so until that regime's demise. But Harris's war has consisted of fatal funding cuts, if you are not aware of what's happening in Ontario, but to healthcare, education, and to vital social services. The most brutal objective of his war against the poor has been the criminalization of the poor, and also subsequently the marginalization and the demonization of all those who are actively resisting those policies, and of course the criminalization of anti-poverty activists who are resisting further dehumanization of the poor. So, but this war is not just contained in Ontario. We're seeing this also in Alberta and BC, for example, and activists there have suffered similar fate when they've tried to resist the provincial government's policies. And, of course, anti-globalization and social justice activists from a plethora of movements also experienced this in Quebec City and in Vancouver against the APEC meeting. Most recently in Montreal, and I understand also in Windsor at the OAS meeting. So they, you know, generally what's happening is that activists are starting to receive more and more brutal forms of repression. And in fact, all over the country, the rhetoric of law and order is being used, and coupled with, you know, violent riot squad police to try to stifle and to try to suppress a lot of the resistance and to the implementation of their economic policies. But after September 11th, the law and order rhetoric was quickly coupled with the rhetoric of security and safety. And with the passage of sweeping legislation, what happened is that the war at home was given a boost. And this war has escalated and accelerated to such a level that fighting it is becoming increasingly difficult and dangerous, but it's also absolutely necessary if we are to achieve the free and just society that we're all, you know, fighting for. So in my discussion, I'm going to demonstrate how the rhetoric of law and order and now the rhetoric of safety and security is being used to justify the war at home waged by the government against its own citizens, and how this justification in turn is used as a basis for creating laws which give them the power to continue their war unhindered. It's important to keep in mind that a lot of the success for this justification depends upon the maintenance and perpetuation of a climate of fear and insecurity, which can then be, you know, capitalized and harnessed to justify passing legislation which will seriously restrict civil liberties and democratic rights. So what does the war at home look like? The arsenal includes censorship of the press, the control and monopolization of the media outlets in the hands of a few who support the war and globalization agenda that is shared by the government, such as the people might have been familiar with the CanWest scandal that's happening right now, suppression of dissent of all forms, even debate, as you can witness by the inability of MPs to vote freely as they wish if it's contrary to their party's leaders. Marginalization of those who defy autocratic rule or refuse to toe the party line, such as Sven Robinson, when he spoke out of the injustice against the Palestinians in the Middle East, or ridicule and demonization of those who openly and courageously criticize the state, whether it's domestic policies or foreign policies, like Sunera Tabani or, you know, Jaggi Singh, our very own Jaggi Singh. But, and a very important arsenal in this war is also the rhetoric of terrorism to fast-track the creation of laws which erode over 800 years of civil liberties and effectively eliminates the rights and protections that are necessary to guard the freedoms that are so vital in a democracy. So, for example, the way in which protesters were treated during the anti-FTA protests in Quebec City, and the passage of the Anti-Terrorism Act, and now what we have is Bill C-55, which I'll talk to you about a little bit more, the Public Safety Act. Also is the implementation of the neoliberal economic and social policy agenda, and the use of the police, domestic and foreign intelligence, against its own people. So, you know, we saw this, for example, again in Quebec, and particularly used against the native communities. In essence, what's required in this war is a full-on assault on civil, political, economic, social, human rights, and democracy and democratic institutions, and the strengthening of the state's economic, political, and military power, not against foreign states, but against its own people. What makes this war particularly insidious is that it is conducted under the benign gaze of the opposition in this country, and some civil libertarians even, at best, and with their active assistance at worst. As the state continues to commit these acts in the name of its citizens, we must acknowledge that if we do not resist this war, then we too are made complicit in it. Canada has waged war against its own people, directed at particular groups throughout history. The Indigenous people, since contact, to as recent as Oka, Burnt Church, and Gustavson Lake, with the completely illegal use of the military and landmines. The Chinese, from the turn of the century to 1950s, the Italians and the Japanese during World War II with internments and confiscation of property, the Quebecois during the FLQ crisis in the 70s with over 467 arrests, of which 62 were charged and less than one-third were actually convicted. So 97% of all those who were arrested were actually illegally arrested and tortured. So there is no doubt that the current targeted group under this political climate is Arabs and Muslims, which Shakir will talk about, you know, more in depth, I guess. But there exists, you know, hundreds of accounts, historical accounts, and masses of evidence to prove that the state's track record on its war against its own people is, you know, is extremely deplorable. So we should not be surprised when war is waged yet again, and on one front with legislation that is intended not only to subvert the fundamental governing principles of democracy, but to deliberately destroy it and to pave the way for the creation of a military state. Now, Bill C-55, which is presently before the House, is called the Public Safety Act, and it was introduced on April 29th, and it's meant to be fast-tracked into law by June 28th, just in time for Kenneth Naskis. It establishes the framework for a military state by creating a cabinet junta. Under Bill C-55, a select few ministers can make security orders that override cabinet. Ministers, not parliament, can delegate powers to officers on the ground to make orders and carry out security orders. What type of security orders does Bill C-55 contemplate? Airport officers, for example, can screen passengers and order their removal, and this is a recipe for racial profiling. Officers can declare military zones anywhere and at any time, and this is a recipe for a military state. Officers can disclose information about passengers to foreign governments, and this is a recipe for targeted invasion of privacy and could potentially place refugees at risk for safety and life because it entails disclosing information such as your name, your date of birth, your nationality, your passport number, all the information about your ticket, including where you bought it, who was the travel agent and travel agency information, how it was paid for, the number of luggages you're carrying, your entire travel itinerary, so what your travel dates are, what your destination is, any stopovers, and all the information that is essentially required for any individual or group or state who is trying to find someone who is fleeing persecution. So, you know, that wasn't pretty smart. But anyway, officers can also make orders to quarantine a population and take any measures if they believe that there might be a risk to health and safety. Now, risk to health and safety is not defined. I mean, what constitutes it is anything that includes a risk which is real or apprehended. And, you know, I was just reminded that the FLQ crisis was an apprehended risk, and I just mentioned what sort of violations occurred there. But this is a recipe for, you know, quarantining entire groups of people and you know, administering forced inoculations and vaccinations. And officers can also prohibit the export of goods and technology. This has no connection at all to security, and it's really actually a recipe for imposing informally sanctions against various countries. So only after these types of orders are actually issued and carried out, only then does Bill C-55 require for the order to be tabled before Parliament and debated and discussed? So it's after, you know, I mean, it's almost like it's moot. But this type of power amounts to rule by decree because the minister and officers will decide on the spot what the law will be without Parliament, without Cabinet, without the public, without the executive or the judiciary. C-55 replaces the parliamentary process and the safeguards within that process. It weakens the foundations of the structures that connect the Constitution to Parliament, the courts of law, the configuration of checks and balances that form the backbone of a parliamentary democracy. C-55 is nothing short of a full attack on democracy, and it paves the way for the establishment of a fascist military state. And people in Canada are shocked to hear that it could be a military state, but, you know, not the Indigenous people or those communities which are subjected to targeted policing, mind you. But fascism does not happen overnight. It is a slow, steady filtration of all the instruments of state power. It's about the slow erosion of civil liberties that we're seeing through the passage of the Anti-Terrorism Act, through the types of detentions that Shakir and I'm sure Drum will talk about. It's about the unspectacular day-to-day injustices, like the death of Kimberly Rogers, who was under house arrest by welfare, and she was denied food and medical attention and basic welfare assistance, and she was 7 months pregnant at the time of her death. So these are the sort of injustices that are sort of occurring on a daily basis. And so fighting this war at home means, which is leading us down to the road of fascist military state, means educating ourselves and others about government policies and their effects. It means working with the truly powerless and oppressed people in this country. It means monitoring and scrutinizing public institutions and demanding accountability. It means fighting media censorship and voicing your dissent. It means working in solidarity with the hundreds of resistance movements across the country and around the world who are fighting daily injustices such as exploitative, you know, labor conditions, violence against women, appropriation of native lands and resources, the devastation of the environment, and just everyday violence of displacement, dispossession, and abject poverty. So I encourage you to continue your work here, and I want to thank you very much for this opportunity.